This episode is sponsored by The Tempestry Project. The Tempestry Project is a knit-along art project of temperature tapestries documenting the high temperatures of any city, any year. You can learn more about The Tempestry Project by listening to Casey's interview with the founders in podcast episode 98 and the video tutorial I recently released covering the knitting techniques used. The Tempestry Project also has needle wranglers available, colorful little zigzags designed to make sure your knitting stays on the needles while it's in your knitting bag. When they first started making these, they were 3D printing all of them. Now they've gone into production with a local company and they're making minis, standards, and jumbo sizes. If you'd like to get involved and knit your own tempestries, they are offering a discount to Very Pink Knits podcast listeners. Visit their website or Etsy shop and enter the code VERYPINK5 at checkout for a $5 discount on purchases over $50. That coupon will run through September 30th. And in the show notes, I will link to everything I've talked about here, including the very active Facebook group. That'll all be in the show notes for this episode. Welcome to the Very Pink Knits podcast, the companion podcast to the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. I'm Stacy and I'm here with Casey.
Hi there.
Casey is the media manager here at Very Pink and she's also producing this show. If you'd like to get your knitting question on the show, just email it to podcast@verypink.com and please tell us where you're from. This is episode 113, so everything we say we're going to put in the show notes will be in the show notes under episode 113. You can get to those show notes by going to verypink.com and clicking the podcast tab at the top of the page. How are you, Casey?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, too. We're in the never-ending rain of Austin, Texas.
I know. We're going to need a boat.
We're going to need a boat. This is so unusual after like such a hot summer that it's just been weeks and weeks of rain. It's like the Pacific Northwest or something.
Right. It's weird.
It's cozy. Yes. I was running. The AC isn't really running because it's just not that warm outside. But I had the fireplace going a little bit, the gas fireplace going a little bit with the doors closed. So I get, and I'm wearing shorts, of course, because, but so I have that little bit of coziness fall feeling happening in my house, nice. Which is, it all wraps up in the hygge feeling with the knitting and everything else. Yeah.
That's what my friend was posting on Facebook that her child was like, she's like, you might want a sweatshirt. It's a little cool. And they're like, oh, it's cold now? Because if we don't have, they're like, it's winter?
No.
Because we don't have, and she's like, no, it's fall. We don't have a fall, really. So when it starts to get a little cold, kids think it's winter.
I know. It's nuts. It's nuts. I mean, you'd think in other parts of the world, kids would look around and see that, well, people are still in shorts and sandals. Yeah. So no, it's not cold yet. Not really. Yeah. It's different than it was a few weeks ago, but it's not really cold yet. Yeah.
We're not dying.
So we have to fake the feeling. We have to fake the feeling with like a fireplace that doesn't actually throw any heat. Yeah.
And the idea of putting jeans on isn't like, oh, it's torture to like think about wearing pants when it's 100 degrees.
I know, putting on long pants or it hasn't been all that hot out lately, but of course it's been really humid with all of this rain and it's just, you know, this area of the country gets really humid. And I usually wear long sleeve tops when I'm walking the dogs just for sun protection. And kind of the same thing with the long pants. I get back home and I have to peel the long sleeve shirt and it's like, every inch of trying to get that shirt off my arms is peeling because it's wet from the humidity and the sweat and everything. And that's kind of the same thing. It's like, I don't know. Women kind of have it made this way in that we can wear dresses and shorts a lot more places than men can.
Yeah.
When it's hot like this. Yeah. Not so bad. Sundresses are the way to go, right?
Yes. I'll put on a dress and my husband's like, oh, you look nice. I'm like, it's a secret. It's like pajamas.
It is totally like wearing pajamas. Yes.
And you don't get
not
to
bad
do
when
it.
It's hot. No, it's just for us. Well, they could if they wanted.
Well, you can walk around with no shirt on, I guess, if you really wanted to.
You know, that was when I was a kid, that was the thing that really bothered me is that I had to wear a top and boys didn't have to wear a top. I got over it.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it now. Okay, before we get into the knitting questions, I'm really interested in this interview. I'm excited about this interview. So tell me about this woman and her book.
Okay. I interviewed Bridget Schulte. She wrote a book called Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. And I came across it in an article in the New York Times about hobbies and how people kind of forgot what hobbies were, or people tend to take on a hobby and make it their side project. And for example, if you knit something and somebody says, you should sell that, you should make those, I would pay you for that. And it's like, no, it's okay for it to just be a hobby. And so we're going to talk. We talked about that.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to read this book too. So let's go ahead and have a listen.
Okay.
I'm Bridget Schulte, and I'm a longtime journalist. And I wrote a book called Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time, that looked at why people feel so overwhelmed and busy, and at why people have such little time, it feels, to combine work and life. And not only that, but have very little time for play or hobbies. And I'm currently the director of the Better Life Lab at New America, which is a program that's now trying to fix all the problems that I wrote about in my book. So we work on work-life issues, gender equality, and how we really can find working family supportive policies, and how can we get them passed in the United States.
Great.
So that's me.
Yeah. So like I said, when we talked earlier, I came across an article in the New York Times about the case for having a hobby, and you were quoted in that article, and it really struck me because I'd recently been to a dinner party with some, and I'm Gen X, and there were some millennial women in there, and I didn't know them, so I was getting to know them, and I said, what do you do? And they were like, well, I'm a dental hygienist or whatever, but my real passion is dogs, and I'm really trying to get this dog thing off the ground, and kind of making excuses for why she didn't have her passion project being her job. And another woman said something really similar, and we left that dinner, and I was saying to my husband, I was like, this is so strange. Like, why can't you just have a job and like let that thing be your thing on the side? So
it's such a good question.
So what's going on?
Well, you bring up a really good point. And, you know, why is it that you feel like you can't have a passion project on the side, or that it has to be sort of all encompassing? And there are a couple reasons for it. And I think that you see it particularly in millennial or young generation. Think about all of the speeches that people give at a commencement. You know, the Steve Jobs famous commencement speech, you know, live your passion and, you know, do something that just thrills you and excites you every day. So there's kind of this crazy pressure on people to not only figure out what passion is, which for a lot of people is like, you're not sure, or maybe it changes, but not only to figure that out, but then to pursue it in this kind of entrepreneurial, you know, really big way to live this big life. And, you know, some of us can do that. Some of us aren't really quite sure, but it sort of created this pressure that any other way of living is somehow less important. So that's one thing. And then the second thing, too, we just have to realize that in the United States, we live in a real achievement culture. And so there's a lot of pressure to be the best at anything. And that extends to hobbies as well. You know, you mentioned the New York Times piece that I was quoted in. And I laughed because when she called and asked about hobbies, I was talking about the achievement culture and how that makes it difficult for people to just do something they enjoy. You know, for instance, years ago, before I had children, I was learning how to play the Irish harp, and I really enjoyed it, and it was really fun. But there was this weird pressure that I felt that I had to get really good if I was going to spend the time on this. And so in the back of my mind, even though I didn't really admit it to myself, I was thinking, I better get good so I can, you know, maybe play on somebody's CD or, you know, like do something professionally. And, you know, and those little thoughts would sort of cross my mind, and I'd be like, what are you talking about? Why can't you just, you know, you don't have to be a concert pianist to enjoy playing the piano or play at a jazz club. You can just play the piano in your home because it's enjoyable.
Yeah.
But sometimes because of our achievement culture, it makes it difficult to realize that, that you don't always have to be the absolute best at everything and turn it into your job.
Yeah. So have you found a way, because I know in your book, you talk a lot about like why it's good for us. And we talk about that with some other scientists, just having something, knitting is really good for you just for relaxation and stress relief. Is there a way to kind of turn off that achievement oriented thought?
Yeah, well, I think the first step toward any change is just awareness. Mm-hmm. So being aware that, you know, that it's there and that you might be reacting to it. So sometimes that's the first and most important thing, sort of being aware of it, catching it, and then really reconnecting with, well, why are you doing it anyway? You know, not every painter is going to be Picasso. I've got a good friend and she loves to paint and she sends me little, you know, beautiful little still life that she does. And that's enough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of recognizing that it doesn't have to be this grand thing or, you know, that you can write poetry and maybe somebody won't discover them in the drawers and publish them like Emily Dickinson, you know,
right.
And that is okay. So reconnecting with why you're doing it in the first place and recognizing that if it's something that gives you joy, or if it's something you're drawn to, you know, if it relaxes you, if it's something that you look forward to, that in itself is enough. And sometimes you have to almost talk yourself into that, because in an achievement culture, that's really hard. We have all of these pressures that we need to be busy, that we need to be productive, that doing something you enjoy is sort of a waste of time unless you can somehow monetize it or use it to be better at something else, or, you know, create your startup out of it.
Right.
You know, so we have kind of created these pressures that make it very hard to enjoy the simple pleasures of life.
Yeah. And maybe, I don't know if you've heard this, but we hear this as knitters all the time. If you knit something that's really nice, somebody will say, oh, you should make that. You should sell that. You should get an Etsy store.
I was just going to say, it's like, yeah, Etsy is sort of like, a wonderful outlet and also kind of part of that same pressure that
right.
things need to be transactional, right? And you need to be productive and do something with it. And, I think that that's why it's so important to have these kinds of conversations and recognize having a hobby, something that you just enjoy, that maybe nobody knows you do, or that you do for the pleasure and the love of it. That's part of just being alive.
Yeah.
You know, part of living a good life.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. That's perfect. Thank you so much for taking the time with us. I think that's going to be inspirational to a lot of our listeners who maybe feel a little pressure to get an Etsy shop.
Well, yes, as somebody who knitted one thing once in my whole life, actually, no, two things. I think both of them were scarves because I didn't know how to turn corners. They were both really terrible, but they were really fun to do. You know, I think that's the other thing too about hobbies is letting go of the outcome.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be the perfect sweater. It doesn't have to be the most, you know, beautiful piece of music, you know, but is it something unique to you that refreshes your soul in the moment?
Yeah.
And that should be your only standard.
Yeah. I love it. And that's perfect because we also talk about being a process knitter versus a project knitter, and process knitters just enjoy the process of knitting, but project knitters are kind of working towards that end goal and want that end thing. So kind of we need to work on that a little bit as well. So
yeah, it's sort of the same thing with travel. Are you somebody who enjoys the journey, or are you just getting to the destination, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you like my dad, and we would drive across country from Oregon to Wyoming every summer, and he was just like, roll up the windows, turn on the air conditioning, and get there, you know, or do you want to like meander along blue highways like my husband and I did once and sort of stop at places that look interesting?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with either approach, and maybe you want to do, I mean, I think that's the other thing is just recognize that maybe at different points in your life, you want to do different things in different ways, and it's all okay.
Thank you for that interview, Casey.
Sure.
I'm actually excited to read this book, and she has a podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm excited to listen to both of these because obviously hobbies and activities like that big part of my life. Anyone who's listening to this.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we have, it's kind of this whole theme that like we are working all the time and busy, the busyness of our culture is a little out of control. So it's okay to take that time. And actually that time off is really good for you. Things like that.
It's good for you. Yes. And when you're doing your hobby, you shouldn't, well, unless it's like Christmas time or a birthday coming up or something, doing that without a deadline or any pressures to actually mm-hmm. get a certain amount done. I mean, that's, I think that's really helpful. It's also something that I've always thought is having a hobby that creates something tangible. When during our work days, most of us sit at a computer and create all of these intangible things. We spend all our whole day like creating these really intangible things. When you knit mm-hmm. something and you see progress that way, I think it's really soothing and comforting and de-stressing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think I have to explain that to any knitter listening. I think every one of us knows that already.
But even like on our podcast, we talk to a lot of like math people who are taking knitting to teach you math and why it's so good for our brains. But it's also just good for your soul to just take that time and have something that's just something just pure enjoyment. And there's no goal in mind.
Right.
Unless you're a project knitter and you have a goal.
Or unless you knit for a living and you have to get the next video out.
Yeah.
It does get stressful for me sometimes, but still, when I have time to myself, that's what I choose to do.
Yeah.
So I totally get both sides of that.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and magically turn some knitting questions into knitting answers, Casey.
Alrighty. We've got a long one to start. Hello, Stacey and Casey. Question one. I hate knitting on straight needles. I learned on them long ago, but I can't stand them now. I knit everything on my interchangeables. I have knit picks, tips, both metal and wood. My cables are knit picks and knitter's pride. Here's the problem I encounter. I'll notice my stitches getting sticky at the join, and I see that my needle is starting to unscrew. I've not had it fall off entirely yet. I always catch it before it slides off the cable completely, but it's a pain. Is it just me? Does this only happen to me? I'm tightening the needles as well, and it doesn't happen on every project, so I'm a bit flummoxed.
Let's go ahead and
that
stop
was kind
there.
Of a mouthful.
It was a mouthful. You did a really good job. This is Bella from Vancouver, BC. And I've had people ask me this question. And almost every time someone asks me and I say, are you using the little key to tighten the needle? They'll say, oh, no, I didn't know that you were supposed to tighten it with the key. Like you'd use a little key, you poke it into the base of the cord and then tighten the needle. So the key gives you something to hang on to so you can get it really tight. So just hand tightening without the key is not enough. But tightening with the key should be enough. And if you are doing it with the key and you're still having a problem, you might actually want to try the needles that have the spin in them, the spin between the cord and the needle, because I'm thinking that however you're knitting, you're maybe putting some pressure on that needle, and any needle brand that you use is going to come detached. Any interchangeable needle you use is going to come detached. So maybe like the Hiya brand would be a good choice. But usually it's people aren't using the key to tighten. And I'll tell you, I have used pretty much every major needle brand under the sun, and I never have a problem with my needle coming loose from my cord. Do you ever have a problem with that?
Mine's done that. And actually, I'm trying to remember which project I was working on that it did that. And I had to stop and pull it out and tighten it with the key. And maybe I didn't tighten it with the key when I first put it on. I can't remember. But I know what she's talking about.
Yeah, I understand what she's talking about. But that is, when you say that that's what happened, is that just a one-time thing for you? Or does it happen regularly?
It doesn't happen regularly, but it's happened a couple times. And it may be that I didn't use the key when I first put it on.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I'm just in a hurry or something. I don't know.
Yeah, throwing your needles together when you're headed out the door or something.
Yeah.
I've done that plenty of times. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Question two. I'd like to make matching hats for my husband and two daughters. I want to make them matching skull and crossbones hats. And I have this kind of awful but kind of awesome glow-in-the-dark yarn I'd like to use for the skulls. The problem is I can't find a pattern I like. I've scoured Ravelry multiple times and haven't found one that's quite right. I'm leaning towards charting my own skull pattern and overlaying it onto a solid color cap. Are there any cap patterns that you think this would work well on? Most of the ones with a shape that I like have ribbing, which I can't figure out would work well if it would work well for this. Also, I've never knit in stranded colors. Would after the fact cross stitch look just as good or close enough? Or are you too horrified by that whole idea that you can't possibly aid and abet such an adventure? Sorry, this is so lengthy. With so much binge listening, you guys feel more like carpool buddies than strangers. I don't know what I'll do when I catch up. Bella from Vancouver.
That's funny. We are your carpool buddies, Bella.
Yeah.
Okay, the question she has here is she wants to do this design, a skull and crossbones design on a hat. And she's, first of all, not finding a good hat pattern for the skull and crossbones design. Okay, let's start from the beginning here. This is really designing. So I'm going to give you some basics on how, like the order of things to make this work. First of all, go ahead and find the skull and crossbones chart that you want to use or draw up your own so that you know exactly how many rows you need of knitting in this hat to accommodate the pattern that you want to use, the design that you want to use, the skull and crossbones. Okay, once you have that number, then you can start looking for a hat pattern. My guess is to get a good skull and crossbones design, you're going to have a lot of rows of knitting, which means you might be making kind of a slouchy hat because the design needs to appear between the ribbing and the decreases. So it's just this solid part of the hat, right? So, okay, you have your skull and crossbones design. You've either designed it yourself or you found something. You have the row number, and then you can start looking at hats. Like, there are a lot of free hat patterns out there. You can start looking at those to see if there's a hat pattern with enough straight stockinette that will accommodate that. If not, Casey and I always recommend Ann Budd's book of handy patterns. Mm-hmm. You can just put together your own hat pattern and just make sure you add enough rows of straight stockinette to accommodate the pattern. Okay, I think we got the hat part worked out. Now for actually adding the design, from what you've described, it sounds like it's going to be not Fair Isle all the way around, but kind of more of an Intarsia design. I actually recommend duplicate stitch for that, and I'll give you a link to my duplicate stitch video. It's kind of what you've said here, like a cross stitch. Is that a good idea to actually embroider the cross stitch on afterwards? Yes, this is a perfect example of when duplicate stitch or embroidering it on the hat after the fact is going to look great. It's not going to mess with your tension. It's going to be easy. I think duplicate stitch is wonderful. I love it. So I'll give you a link to that video. And actually, I'll link to another video I have called Duplicate Stitch versus Intarsia, so you can see the two differences, and maybe it'll explain why I like duplicate stitch so much. So you find your chart, find your hat, and then duplicate stitch it on after the fact. And actually, she's knitting two hats here. She's making one for her husband, or three hats, one for her husband and then a couple for her two daughters. Depending on how old her daughters are, she might actually need to make a little skull and crossbones design to accommodate the hat. I'm not sure. It's going to be a really slouchy hat on a kid if she makes a really big pattern. But that's part of designing. Yep. She'll get it. I've given her the basics here.
Yeah, I actually did a hat with a design on it using
duplicate stitch.
Duplicate stitch, and it turned out really cute. So it's doable.
I use it all the time on like Christmas stockings, or I've used it in Tunisian crochet in a blanket pattern. It's not quite duplicate stitch. That was actually cross stitch. I love duplicate stitch. And I think Elizabeth Zimmerman, when she would knit sweaters for her family, she mm-hmm. would put a not just a normal ribbed cuff at the bottom of the sweater, but actually a folded hem. And she would put a message in the folded hem in duplicate stitch, or she'd knit it in, a message for the person, you know, her grandkid or whatever. I think it's sweet. So many nice things you can do with duplicate stitch. Okay, Casey.
I also want to recommend the book Alternate Stitch Dictionary.
Okay. I'm glad you got that. I was about ready to say we're done for today, but no, let's get this in here. What is this book?
It's Alternate Stitch Dictionary, and it's like a modern... It's a stitch dictionary with a bunch of different modern designs, and I'm pretty sure there's a skull and crossbones design in there.
Like a charted design?
Yeah, it's just a bunch of charted designs, and they're like modern stuff. There's one that's like a handprint. I mean, it's really cool design. So
there's actually a skull and crossbone design that I used on a little sweater one time. It's like an Argyle skull and crossbones. Mm-hmm. It's really cool looking. It was on Ravelry. If I can find it, if I can find it, I'll link to it because I thought it was a really cool design. Yeah. Okay, alternates. All right. Well, that is all we have time for this week. So, Casey, if people want to find you online?
My website is Casey Knits, the letter K and the letter C.
Okay, and all your social media buttons are there. Mm-hmm. And if you want to find me, there is, of course, the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel and verypink.com. And if you scroll to the bottom of the homepage, all of my social media buttons are there. And that is all we have time for this week. So until next week, stay warm, my friends.